This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Eita, Dumelang, hello, how are you doing? Welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrix, with Botsang Modimo Wame Muilwa. Thank you for all of our viewers last week.
Who tuned in
live and the week before that. This week, because of travel schedules, we shan't be going live, but we will do it again the following week. Because I think we enjoy the live shows, don't we?
Thank you, brother man. I seriously enjoy it. Very interesting. Mm. With all the glitches and challenges. It's a teeth in face.
Yes.
And I hope the followers and the viewers will bear with us, help us to improve, because some of the suggestions came from them.
Absolutely.
Even angry suggestions. Like, hey, guys, if the quality is bad, go back to recording. But anyway, good morning, Tato. And morning to the followers and the viewers and subscribers. Thank you.
I think first things first, happy Independence Day, Botswana. Amid pressure from the global north regarding mining and wildlife. What are your thoughts on this?
Happy Independence Day. You know, I always call it, that's why the global north, particularly England, that our people should know that actually, 58 years now?
Yeah.
58 years ago, on the 30th of September, the British colony handed over independence to the Republic of Botswana.
No, Botswana land.
Botswana
land, as they called it.
Yes. And
they called it that because they couldn't be bothered to actually make an effort. And that's what it was.
To say Botswana.
And then the Nats didn't call it Gaborone, they called it Gaborones. So there were literally signs when you're driving from about Rustenburg, Zeerust, to the border.
Yes,
signs literally said Gaborones.
Actually,
despite the map says Gaborone.
Yeah.
Oh, the Nats were like, we don't care.
But that what's worse is when I joined the then Department of Foreign Affairs and Information.
Yes, sir.
Everybody, because we tell people in the diplomatic circles, you call the country you're posted in with the capital city.
Ah, yes.
So when you say the South African rep, you don't say to the U.S., you say to Washington.
Ah, yes.
Because the one in New York may be for the U.N.
Oh,
so
yes,
you say
yes,
the South African High Commissioner in Gaborone.
Okay.
And you know what they were saying? Gaborone.
Yeah.
And which country is there's a capital called Gaborone?
Couldn't be bothered to make an effort.
But anyway, bro, with the Independence Day on it, we know how the minister, the president, Ramaphosa, has been struggling and, you know, fuming about the mining rights. He has actually told TBS at some stage to say, if you are not going to reach this 50%, you better pack and go. We can leave this contract. I said before, countries like Botswana, they're still kind because they're still even negotiating a certain percentage. The processing of the diamonds, you know, finished products, can it be done in Botswana or somewhere in Asia where it will be more beneficial for Botswana?
Sure.
But the most recent one, which was very disturbing, and it's for people who are not in charge of reality. You see, Europeans, particularly the so-called green parties and green life people in Germany, especially.
So what, the animal huggers?
Yeah.
The tree huggers?
Yeah, those who hug trees and kiss snakes and rats and mice all over. You can see how much former colonialists have disrespect for independence of the country. The Republic of Botswana is an independent state at the moment. But the UK still have the nerve to can actually dictate to Botswana on how they should treat, in this instance, their wildlife.
Or how to manage wildlife.
Or how to manage your wildlife. And above human beings, Botswana is sitting with approximately more than 30% of the elephants of the sub-Saharan Africa, actually of the southern part of Africa. They're killing people. They're destroying the ecosystem.
In fact, that's what I was going to say, that I love how unapologetic President Dr. Masisi has been in saying we are managing our elephant populations in a way that benefits everyone, including people in villages where there's so many elephants that are even attacking people. At some stage, you have to cull the numbers or move the numbers to other countries that need elephants. But you can't just let the population grow in a way that now we can't even live peacefully with the wildlife.
Yes, but I like what Ironically, it's got a Zulu on the Belongguni name, the Minister of Tourism. I think it's Tamsang or something like that. I like her response to say, but who are you sitting in Europe? And the Germans got involved into this. And I tell you where the Germans got involved, to say, who are you to come and dictate for us on how we should manage, not destroy the elephant community. Yeah, we should manage. Botswana has the highest elephant population in the world. And we have countries in Asia and other countries that respect, they treat an elephant as a goddess or something like that. But yes, but Botswana is sitting with a problem that elephants are killing children, killing human beings, destroying, you know, water supply to houses. Yes, they have to live. They have to find a way of living in harmony between them. And those who have never been to the Chobe area, where wildlife is actually roaming, where human beings live.
I remember I was in Kasani.
Kasani, yes.
About 2 years ago. And I'm taking a walk in the evening around 7:38.
Yeah.
And a taxi driver stops and he greets me. And he's like, why are you walking around at night at this time? I was like, no, I'm just taking a jog. He's like, the elephants are about to come out.
Yes.
You might take a very, very, very fast jog. Because the elephants literally live within where the people are.
Yes.
And other wildlife.
Exactly. Especially the, what you call it, the wild pig, the warthog, the elephant.
Yes.
In some instances, actually, I used to frequent Kasane because of the Kasungula Bridge.
Oh, yes, yes,
so,
yes.
Due to my duties, I had to be in that area almost every 6 months. I always tell people, if I marry again, my honeymoon is going to be at the Chobe area. There's a very beautiful history also. But what I'm saying is now Botswana has embarked on a process to say we have excess supply of elephants. And they opened up what the previous president, General... is it Ian Khama?
So,
lieutenant, there is a lieutenant general.
Yes, there is a Khama, Ian Khama.
Ian Khama, yeah, yes. Yeah. The last president before Masisi. He had kept, what do they call it, trophy hunting for elephants. But the current administration had to open it because it was becoming too much that, you know, the excess supply. And now the UK and others who are benefiting in hunting elephants and having these trophies like they've done in hunting lions in Zimbabwe and South Africa and Namibia, they were excited about it. But there are those who are supposed to be wildlife conservationists or whatever, and they are against this. Now Botswana takes another effort, and Germany gets into the picture. Botswana takes another initiative, Tato. And you know, people will say, I'm sitting here and I'm talking about my homeland and I'm too protective. This part of Africa.
Sure.
Botswana takes another initiative. They say our neighbors or our fellow Africans, Angola and Mozambique, due to their wars in the past, they've lost a tremendous number of elephants.
Sure.
And therefore, they will export some to those countries. Get what the Germans and the British are saying. Yeah, but you are distressing these animals in transporting them to those countries. So you transport them so that they can graze in the wildlife where they are needed. They complain. You open for trophy hunting at a limited period. That trophy hunting license of Botswana is open until the 31st of January 2025. You understand? So normally hunting period ends around August, September. They've extended until end of January. They're still complaining. And I was sitting there and I'm saying, but who are these people that they can come and complain when they are actually hunting diamonds in Botswana, and it's okay for them when it suits them? And you know what the President Masisi said? He was so upset. He said he will take a number of Boeing 747s and load these elephants and drop them.
In fact, I laughed. I think this was in April, where President Masisi was like, to Germany, no, we can send 20,000 elephants to you then.
I think, you know, President Masisi, you love the elephants, you want them.
You can have them.
You can have them. While Israel is busy dropping bombs in other countries, he must go and drop elephants in Germany and the UK. But, you know what, thumbs up to Botswana again. Congratulations to President Masisi and fellow Botswana for their independence. And they're starting to show what is the meaning of independence.
Sure.
We're not going to let our former colonial masters to continue dictating Haiti for us as a country, and thumbs up to Botswana. They are known to be very peaceful people who can fight.
Sure.
But on principle, Botswana will put their foot down.
And Germany must focus on paying reparations to Namibia.
Exactly.
We haven't forgotten.
Before they talk.
We haven't forgotten. We must pay reparations to all the people you massacred in Namibia.
Exactly.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, don't be angry like last week, okay? Aye, calm down.
It's actually upsetting how condescending these people often are, that they continue to treat us exactly like they did 300-400 years ago, like we're savages and we need to be civilized.
And that
they have the key to our civilization.
They don't even care about the human life. Botswana says these elephants are killing children.
Mm.
And now we want to do it. I think the district mayor or governor of the Chobe area is a lady in Botswana. Mm. She was saying, even when we sell these elephants or we take them for trophy hunting or what, normally it's old elephants that are not, can't breed anymore.
Sure.
They've reached the age of, you know, they are no longer breeding age. But also the revenue, no matter how little it is, you know, and the Germans and the British says, but that's too little money. Little for who? Little for that. Some of the revenue that Botswana is using in curtailing this elephant, it's building schools, building clinics, helping victims of attacks by elephants. And these countries, when there are these attacks, they don't care. They don't sit and say to the government of Botswana, you are not protecting your citizens. They're not saying that. They're like, let those citizens die. It's okay, but elephants must not be killed, must not be touched. But anyway, thanks, my brother.
Let's move on. Minister Thembi Simelane continues to be embattled.
Yes.
What's the latest, sir?
What's the latest? Well, what happened before this current week? Last weekend, after we recorded on Saturday, on Sunday, there was media reports that the ANC didn't deny it.
Sure.
The Secretary General of the ANC, Mr. Fikile Mbalula, had asked Thembi Simelane, the minister, to do herself a favor and resign. So that's informal, because none of us have seen that communique or correspondence between the SG and the senior member of the ANC. But you know what is ironic, Fresh? You remember 2 weeks back I said President Ramaphosa is caught between a hard rock. That one of her senior cabinet ministers was a young woman and seems to be effective, sat in front of the president and made representations regarding this saga, this whole thing about loaning money from Gundo, the former VBS administrator, or financial advice. The second part of it is that the president is under so much pressure from members of the GNU, particularly the Democratic Alliance and AfriForum, to can relieve Ms. Thembi Simelane of her duties. The third part is Ms. Simelane has appeared in front of the parliamentary committee to can respond. And remember the last time we spoke about this, she had said she's going back to can get records of the agreement and the transaction. And me and you actually said, by the way, didn't she bring the bank records and the agreement when she knew she was going there? Now, one of the media houses, or two of them, they laid their hands on what is purported to be the agreement.
Oh, yes, the loan agreement.
The loan agreement.
But we're told there's discrepancies in terms of timelines, so therefore it must have been done backdated.
Backdated. That's the allegation. That's what we are told. And look, the investigative journalist has made point by point. They actually punched holes on that argument. The very first one, that's very glaring, is the fact that it's written, it's a two-page document written on a plain white paper. No letterhead, but no footnote, nothing.
Yeah, but even if it's written on a serviette,
it's still a binding
agreement.
But Fresh, also, you know, people may start, you know, being technical and say, yeah, he's a minister of justice. It doesn't matter. She was not the minister of justice at that time. It's a private contract. She was not signing a contract on me. And I'm not defending Thembi Nkadimeng or Simelane. Apologies. I am simply saying, even a verbal agreement, it's a binding agreement in terms of the South African, you know, laws, you understand? So whether it's written on a serviette, a tissue paper, a plain white paper, is their choice. The question is it valid? Is it legitimate? Was it filed in declaration of assets? Those are the processes they should be looking at. But if you ask me, if I was her advisor, I would say she must not resign. She must not. If you believe you didn't do anything wrong, do not quit because of the opposition and public pressure.
Okay.
Especially that it's not your current work, that's not questionable. If you didn't do anything wrong, and I'm saying it very carefully, she must not resign. That's one element. The second element is fresh. How many ANC former MPs, ministers, leaders have been alleged to have received bribes or kickbacks or made deals? And you can count from Gwede Mantashe, Nomvula Mokonyane, Fikile Mbalula himself before he left office. There's a case hanging over his head or his clout where he was alleged to have received a kickback from a company that did business with the then Department of Sports, Arts and Culture.
Was this the Dubai holiday?
The Dubai holiday, yes, where a company paid for his Dubai holiday. And he also said it was a loan. Same modus operandi, almost the same facts. You understand? Almost the same. Said, no, that company loan, but that company was doing business with who? With the ministry or the department that he was a minister at. The case never ended. It's still hanging above his head. Why would he then today rise and say to Chembing Kadime, before she is being found guilty, before all administrative and judicial processes are being followed to determine whether she erred or not? And you are already asking the person. But again, politicians and those in the public, PR space,
sure,
they may say in order to save the image of the organization. But again, are they saying her own image, her own personality is not important? The organization is more important. So like I said, if you know, I'm that kind. If I know I didn't do anything wrong, I will never capitulate or compromise or step back.
What if you have not done anything wrong in terms of the law, but in terms of perceptions, in terms of what is right?
Yeah.
Not according to the law, but in terms of what we expect from you at a moral level.
The ethics and the morals.
Exactly. Should morals and ethics be what governs us, or should it strictly be, as long as it's not illegal, I've done nothing wrong?
Fresh, I'm a public servant, and as a human being, ethics are important as well. You understand? But if it's ethics and you think I've not conducted myself in an ethical manner, it's a different ballgame.
And Parliament would be half empty if that was the standard.
I actually have up my number. 80% of Parliament will be gone if ethics were being respected by politicians. Politicians are naturally unethical people. I mean, to be a politician, you have to be unethical. It's one of the unwritten prerequisites. Why would then a politician not act against their political party? Simple example. All of them, the ANC or the DA, they've done wrong. They know that their party has made wrong decisions.
Sure.
They know that their organization, that's why I always say to people in the ANC, you're all corrupt. And their president said that. You know why I'm saying that? Because they know that the ANC has been funded by proceeds of corruption.
Sure.
The organization, not them, whether by white capital or by their ministers and members who have been deployed in government to get kickbacks, then they fund the organization. You know, you are sitting there. You didn't steal any money. You didn't put any money in your pocket. But your organization that is buying you T-shirts, deploying you, is doing that with the proceeds of corruption. So you are unethical in your accepting to be deployed by an organization that is corrupt. So why do you seclude and separate when these people... But if it's public perception, that's where the good PR comes in. She must manage the perception. You cannot live your life or run the country based on perceptions. Then you are unprincipled. Manage the perceptions. You know, put things in the public space whereby you will lead the processes and the public that has deployed you to judge whether you should be in that office or not. But anybody who's going to call for Thembi Simelane to resign based on perception, I will say Thembi Simelane must rise and ask all her comrades to resign as well, because they are one way or the other implicated in some form of corruption and maladministration. All of them that are implicated, Fikile Mbalula, Nomvula Mokonyane, Gwede Mantashe, President Ramaphosa, Deputy President Mashatile, all of them, they must do the same thing. Have honor, show ethical conduct, and step aside. But now they want to do it selectively because, in my opinion, this is because of the pressure from the Democratic Alliance and the AfriForum. Sure. Then in the future, we must start talking about what is this pressure about? What is it that Thembisi Melane is facing all this? For what, 500,000? That happened 5, 6 years, 7 years back. There must be something that is saying we don't want her in that portfolio.
Sure.
And President Ramaphosa must also, you know, I really use the wrong word, but he must have a spine and stand up and say, you know what, I've heard all the stories. I've listened to your presentation. I've heard what the parliament is saying. Let the parliament process end, not what the media suggests.
So.
Let the parliamentary process end, and the president must decide, no, I'm not relieving her of her duties, or no, I'm relieving her of her duties.
So.
It is the presidential prerogative to appoint them and to also dismiss them. And when it's done, he must go to those DA ministers who have been boycotting the imbizos, and tell them also they are conducting themselves unethically by refusing to attend public gatherings that are meant to address the needs and concerns of the citizens of this country.
Now, on Tuesday, Action SA, a political party, went and laid criminal charges against Minister Simelane. And then on Wednesday morning, the Hawks announced that they're going to be investigating said charges. What are your thoughts on the Hawks standing up and saying, we're going to look into things?
That was quick Hawks. The Hawks that do not have money, the Hawks that has been struggling with cases pending from as far back as 2 years back through the Zondo Commission. That was very quick. Action SA, I listened to their spokesperson interview in one of the radio stations. They are basing their charges on the exposure of Media 24 and what is the other media house, Daily Maverick.
Sure.
They are based on that. But the fact that the police station has accepted the charge and to conduct an investigation, and the Hawks have stepped in to say that, it means that there may be some form of prima facie, you know, material that is sitting in front of the police authorities. So I think the police are taking this matter very serious. It is up to Minister Thembisi Melane to go and defend herself as well, you understand? So I think afforded a fair opportunity to go and present a case. If she's guilty of something, she must come and tell us. But I always say, let us not run to conclusions before there are proper investigations.
Sure.
People's lives have been destroyed in the public service in South Africa because of allegations. And once it's in the media, they paint a very, you know, worst picture that will say this person is already guilty. So you are being charged by perception and by the media. But again, it also still says it lies in the hands of Simelane and Ramaphosa to make a decision on this whole thing. But knowing organizations like the AfriForum, Action SA, and the police services, once they run to that point, there must be some sparks in what is in front of them. And it's unfortunate that it's what, 90 days, 3 months into the position, and these things come up. And it's an unfortunate, but it's also maybe a good thing, because it may be the beginning of cleaning the sea. You know, the sea is cleaning itself. So this GNU, they are pimping each other, they're exposing each other, they are charging each other. It may be a good thing. Let them do it, because when we did it as analysts, as observers, or when activists and the public were complaining about the conduct of politicians, we were never taken serious.
Sure.
Now, when it's them eating each other, I think it will be a good thing.
Like I said, just over 100 days ago, when the idea of a GNU was touted, I think the GNU is the best thing that's going to happen to this country in a while. Watch.
He's going to keep on repeating this one, because we differed on that. You were cocksure and you said, watch, this may be what the country needed. You are the analyst that day.
Now, before we move on to the next issue, because I had totally forgotten that Minister Simelane's maiden surname is Nkadimeng. Remember last week we spoke about Vernon Nkadimeng?
Yes, your neighbor in Botswana.
My neighbor who was assassinated via car bomb the winter of 1985.
Yes.
So Minister Simelane at the time would have been about 10 or 11.
Okay.
Because I think I was 12 at the time. I wonder if they're related.
Actually, I thought the Nkadimeng surname was not the maiden surname. I thought it was from her previous marriage.
No.
It was her maiden surname. I don't know. I thought it was the marriage before the character Simelane.
Oh, no. It's Phumelele Simelane Nkadimeng.
Yes.
So she's married to Nkadimeng.
She was. She was married to Nkadimeng. She's now married to Simelane. But that's what I'm thinking.
But like I said, I'm curious as if they're related or not.
I think the ex-husband, Nkadimeng, was the brother to Vernon.
Probably, ne?
Most probably. It's for you to go and do that homework.
I must do the homework and dig.
Yeah.
I will do that. E-tolls are back to haunt us.
They must not come.
because I remember when Premier Lesufi said, you know, the gantries are going to go.
Yeah.
Although it's been a song until the song finished. And there was talk of they're gone. And I think there was they alluded to that we might get refunded if we've paid or something weird like that.
Yes,
now we're being told if you owe, you must pay.
No. If you owe, yes. So what the current minister, my ex-minister, Chikunga,
sure.
Before, when this decision was taken, you remember they even had a ceremony to go and switch off the gantries in the middle of the night at midnight, which I thought it was a fruitless exercise. That why would you go and have a ceremony to switch off the gantries?
It's a photo opportunity. And
to do what? To do a wrong thing.
But also, politicians will take pictures of the opening of a tap. So I don't know why you think it's unusual that gantries being switched off is not a photo op.
Well, when they were switched on, there's an opportunity to say the gantries are here, we are starting a project. Now you are actually shutting down a failed project. We are still spending money. Because to go and have that photo shoot is money. There were staff members working that night and all those. But nonetheless.
And you're paying overtime because it's after hours.
Yeah, it's after hours. You know, it's double the overtime. For what? And she was left with 1 month in office.
Yeah.
But what happened at that time?
So what? The bill?
Previous minister said those who owe the Boatsangs of this world,
sure,
they still owe the state the money.
Okay.
They will still, because it is not fair, and I think the government and the Minister of Transport that time, or Sanral, were fair to say it's not fair that Tato has been paying and Boatsang has not been paying.
And I still have my tag.
Yeah, I saw it in your car.
I still have my tag.
So now, but that's not even the issue at the moment.
Yeah.
The issue at the moment is the Gauteng provincial government is going to help Sanral. Remember, Sanral is a national state entity for national roads.
And the bill is what, 30 billion?
No, right it now. Will go. I think the bill is about between 12 and 18 billion.
Yeah.
It will go up to 30 billion because they're going to pay. Actually, they've already paid the first a batch of about 2.3 billion.
Mm.
They've already paid this week, beginning of September. I mean, we are in of October.
Mm.
Now, because they are paying this over a period of the next, say, 3 to 5 years, it will amount to 30 billion. And that's what I'm questioning. You owe the suppliers or the service renders or whoever.
The investors.
Yeah, the Austrian, I don't know whether it's Austrian or Australian company that came with these countries. You owe them money. And other service providers, those who were, for example, used to come and collect and remind us, those lot of letters that I used to get through the post office, those offices that they had in shopping malls or kiosk to try and encourage people to, there's money involved in that and there's contracts that were involved. So those people must be paid. Now, why? And I know the government will stand up and say, we don't have money, but Fresh, let me use Public Administration 101. You owe a service provider between, let's say, 15 billion for gantries or for e-tolls. You want to pay 15 billion over 3 years and you are going to end up paying 30 billion. What madness is that? Why do you want to pay interest? You see, this is where corruption happened and maladministration. Understand? I think, and this is Boatsang talking independently, I think the benefactors of the e-tolls will still get their money in full. They are 30 billion rents in full. No matter whether the service is rendered or not. Because remember, this was not like you put gantries in and people pay it. It was, you have to render that service. In the transport sector, they call it a user pay principle.
Yes.
So you pay in the process of using. Those who don't use those roads, they don't pay. You understand? Now, You are going to pay these people $30 billion in total because of the interest that will accumulate over time. And I think it is not a wise move from the government. As much as they managed in the last week to find $2.8 billion to pay to do the first payment, they could have easily went to the Treasury and say, let's talk, let's verimentation funds. I've spoken about verimentation of funds in government many times.
What is that?
When you have an allocated and approved budget.
Yes, sir.
In a certain financial year, let's say 2024, 2025, and then you've got crisis, like, for example, floods or whatever, you get the Treasury regulations allows you to move funds from one allocated item to a priority item. But you must motivate and get a permission for doing that. They are still not telling us where will they get the money that will pay for this country's or the ETOL's debt. They are not telling us. They say they've engaged the Treasury, they've engaged the Department of Transport and SANRAL. Everyone is working together, which is beautiful, which is good. But it is still our money, fresh. It is still public monies. Why would you not verimentation funds and use funds that many government departments, we know that in Gauteng it happened, not to say health is important, but we know that in Gauteng, the same government has returned money that was destined for health in the last financial year to the Treasury because it was not used for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Now, I'm saying there are so many items in a budget of a state that it does not mean when they've given you 300 billion, you are using the entire 300 billion.
Sure.
If you've got competent public administrators sitting there and monitoring the utilization of the budget, they can see that by the time the financial year ends, this money on this item is not going to be used.
Yes, sir.
Then we can move it to avoid paying interest. So all I'm saying is the government should be avoiding to pay interest. They should pay off the debt. We owe that money. And unfortunately, we, the Gautengers, who make noise, who didn't want the countries, we are also naive that it will come to bite us. You know, one way or the other, the Gauteng provincial government will get the money from our pockets. One way or the other. It's not going to fall from like manna from heaven. We may not be paying through the
road taxes.
The road taxes. But one way or the other, it's us.
We will still be taxed.
Now, as a taxpayer and a resident of Gauteng and a transport baby, I'm saying instead of shifting that indirectly to the taxpayer, look at unutilized funds within the allocation and do not pay interest. My problem with this whole thing is the interest and paying over time. You can't tell me that Gauteng can't raise 15 billion when these people blow billions, 30, 40, 50 billion every year.
Or fail to spend.
And avoid paying interest. You know, people don't understand that interest in a capitalist society is the worst enemy to the consumer. And now the Gauteng government is going to pay a lot of, billions. I'm not talking 15 million. I'm talking about between 8 and 12 billion that the Gauteng provincial government will be paying.
It's criminal as it is. That is the interest rate.
Yes. Like I said, I know it's madness, that interest rate, but I think they have done it that way. And
so
that's my thinking.
So you think it's intentional?
It's intentional in order to cover and to shut
down
the company.
So we're paying eventually.
Yeah, you're eventually paying. Strategically, you are paying for those e-tolls. And sad for those who paid, you are not getting your money back. You are not getting any. But how?
And now we found out this week that those that haven't paid still owe that money.
Yes. But do you think we will pay? I'm one of those who owe, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I'm not against the user pay principle. I'm one of the people to say, if you've got good facilities or good services or infrastructure, you must pay for the use of that infrastructure. Remember, there was nothing wrong with e-tolls because when I use the N4, managed by Bakwena Platinum. It's a government road, but it's being managed by Bakwena or any other toll road that I use. I pay. You go to Durban, you pay. The most expensive toll gate in the Republic of South Africa is in Swartrichens going to Gaborone, to Botswana. It's the most expensive toll gate. I pay when I use that road. But the problem with the Gauteng toll, e-tolls and gantries was the manner that it was implemented.
Sure.
Even courts ruled that there was no proper public consultation. And that's what went wrong. So all I'm saying is we as public servants, we as transport officials, we didn't do our due diligence in implementing the e-toll. And that's why now we are paying the price. It is politicians not listening to technocrats to say, let us do this thing right. Let us do that. Let us consult both Hato, Trevor, and whoever on the street and talk to them about this. But alternatively, improve alternative roads. Make alternative roads drivable. You know, like when you travel from Centurion to Joburg, the alternative road is what they used to call the old Joburg Road.
Oh, yes.
If that road is rehabilitated like they are doing now, many people would have opted to use it than to pass four countries, you know, from Centurion to city of Joburg. It's four countries.
Yeah, don't punish me with a toll because you know the alternative route is unnavigatable.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, I talk as a citizen, as a taxpayer, and as a government official, to say, and I'm not representing the government. I'm simply saying, if we act and conduct ourselves as public servants in a manner for the best interest of the people, we would have not been where we were and find Panyaza Lusufi trying to plug all the water holes with all the fingers and toes for something that started even when he was not there. But fortunately, it was his political party that was in charge in Gauteng. It was his those who groomed him, let him clean up the mess.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Let's move to the city of Tshwane. Democratic Alliance Federal Chairperson, Helen Zille, says that the removal of Mayor Cilia Brink might, as mayor, might jeopardize the bigger relationship, the national relationship with the ANC, and that they're going to resubmit his name in the next round of we need a new mayor for Tshwane.
Yeah.
And that if he's not put back as mayor, there might be a problem. What are your thoughts on that threat?
Hi, Fresh. Madam Zille, as they call him Godzilla, he's a real Godzilla. He's Godzilla in them. You see, my first problem with the Democratic Alliance and Helen Zille is she talks with authority in all the matters.
Sure.
She talks as if she is the president of the government of national unity.
Yeah.
She's first not in any public office. That's the first part. The second part is the Democratic Alliance has a leader named Steyn. John.
Brickhouse, Steenhuisen.
Steenhuisen, yes. They have a leader who should be talking, and I would regard Steenhuisen as the counterpart of Cyril Ramaphosa because he's the leader of a political party. Understand? Now, Zille as the boss, because I've learned that the position she occupies in the DA, it's actually the powerhouse of the DA. But she talks to the ANC as if they are like another branch or wing of the DA.
Like they had less votes than the DA.
Exactly. And in Gauteng, they've actually, you know, showed Madam Zille a middle finger to say, but you are not going to dictate to us. And her comments also created an impression that the ANC in Gauteng, they are rebels. They don't listen to their national leadership. So that kind of statements, actually, you know what they did? They actually added more fuel into the fire that the ANC is already sitting in. It is an open secret that the African National Congress members and leaders are divided about their participation in the GNU. They are divided. They just respect each other and they respect the organization. Now, whenever Helen Zille is doing this, politically, it's a strategic thing that she's doing, Fresh. She's actually poking, you know, the fire within the ANC. She knows what is the challenging part. She's poking, but, and you can see sometimes the way the ANC reacts. The national office of the ANC was quiet for a long time until the deputy secretary general, the first deputy, Nomvula Mokonyane, stood up and said, no, but Zille can't talk to us like that. She can't want to dictate to the ANC how to behave. But all along, the Gauteng ANC have been singing from Tshwane, the proposed mayor, what is his name? Maepa, Khosi Maepa, Panyaza Lusufi, TK Ngcisa, that I think is one of the best diplomats that the ANC, the man when he spoke, their secretary general of Gauteng, he's level-headed. You must see all his interviews. He talks with respect, he speaks sense, and while he's defending the organization. Then there's the Mayiles, on the other hand, who don't hold punches. They say as it is. So the ANC national has led Gauteng to fight this battle. But then you must ask yourself, going back to your question with Brink, or Cilia Brink, the mayor of Tshwane, or the now outside mayor of Tshwane, what is it that the DA or bring has hold on. And I don't think it's about, I don't think it's about Tshwane. I know it's the last big metro that they are holding on. I think it's more about Brink, the person, than Tshwane. Why would the DA be prepared to lose Gauteng, to lose Joburg, to lose Ekurhuleni? And with Tshwane, they are fighting with tooth and nail. Everything they have in their hands to can fight. But unfortunately, this is not dependent on them. Last week, I said, this is going to test the ANC. The vote is actually, as we are recording, they've brought it closer to say they're going to put him again and the ANC must vote for him. I mean, it's a matter of let's see. But the ANC has another problem, as I've said before. Action SA, which is the key maker in this whole process, they are also saying they are putting their candidate, who's the current deputy mayor of Tshwane, as a candidate. The ANC, this is my observation, I met with one of the ANC leaders of Tshwane this week, and the EFF. The ANC is also having a problem. Their leader in Tshwane, it's not a province, what do you call it? The regional leader of Tshwane is not the preferred candidate to be a mayoral candidate. The majority of them in the provincial leadership, they prefer Ntate Nkosi Maepa, the former mayor, to take over. But Action SA said, no, if you are not bringing your regional leader, we are also bringing our person. So it's no longer a battle of the ANC Action 8 EFF alliance versus the DA. The ANC has problems themselves.
I think there's four names right now.
Yeah, it's Brink, is the Action SA is putting their current deputy mayor, Maya Omoya, and then the ANC is putting Maepa, but the ANC has also the provincial, the regional chairperson of relatively unknown, not a flamboyant person. And Maepa has been in the limelight. He has been a mayor before. And actually on Wednesday morning, one of the TV stations interviewed the previous mayor, Randall. Was Randall from Action SA? I think so.
Not sure.
Randall is the previous mayor. Kobo Action SA. He lambasted Brink to say, but they've been lying to the nation. Some of the projects they are claiming, as the DA does it wisely, it's projects that he had started before he left the office.
Randall Williams.
Randall Williams, yes. He's from Action SA. He's the previous mayor of Tshwane. He had a short stint as the executive mayor of Tshwane. But it's a challenge, but I love this challenge because it is going to test the relationship between the ANC and the DA or the convenient marriage. But you know what? I don't think, differing from Helen Zille, I think she is, what do you call it when somebody makes noise just to scare people? I don't think...
What, crying wolf?
Crying wolf. I don't think it will bite. What could the DA do? The DA will never withdraw from the GNU because they are benefiting from it. They will not. I've heard as Tien Huisen saying they are going to call for a meeting with the national leadership. That's the correct approach. They have written to President Ramaphosa to say, let's engage, let's talk. That is the correct approach. This one who's running the DA from Twitter and social media, I don't think has scary thoughts. Has scared anybody so far. Actually, I've seen Panyaza Lusufi and the others coming back, and handling Helen Zille in the same manner that she's conducting herself. They retaliated in the same manner.
Sure.
Social media is a modern day form of communication. It causes hype in the country. It reaches people faster than when they are in board meetings. But if not used wisely, it could be very reckless for a political office bearer or a leader of a political party to be reckless on social media. That's some of the problems that it may cause if you don't use it wisely.
You become a PR nightmare for your own people.
For your own people, yes. Because I think if I was a DA member, I would be very worried today about the conduct of Helen Zille. I would be very worried. So what kind of a leader conducts herself in this manner.
Sure. No. Now, before we move to the Middle East and wrap up today's episode, let's talk about the first 100 days of the GNU. Just generally, what are your thoughts?
Well, let me eat the humble pie and say, Fresh, it is too early to can see the results. But to be honest, the way these ministers, and most of them is the new ones, have conducted themselves, I think I must be able to clap hands to say they have talked too much. Some have done a lot. Some have actioned issues. We have seen how Katie McKenzie has been the most excited, the one talking more and moving things, followed by the Home Affairs Minister, who's from the Democratic Alliance. Mm. And I think we have seen things, whether those things were happening behind the scenes or they moved them faster, at a faster pace than it was. You know, service delivery, backlogs, let me call them backlogs. There are things that were on the pipeline but were not implemented for whatever reason. We don't know why some of the things were not implemented. President Ramaphosa, in the 100 days of the GNU, he has signed almost 4 or 5 bills that were hanging. We have seen Home Affairs IDs fresh. People, thousands of IDs that were on the, and we don't have elections this year. Mm. This period after the elections have passed. Somebody would have said, the DA is pushing for these IDs to be issued because elections are coming. Mm. But it's after the elections, and we have to give credit there.
But why do you think there was such a backlog? Because surely it's just an admin thing, that we have a backlog, let's fix it.
And it's not only on IDs. You can talk about IDs, firearm licenses, driver's licenses, everything else, health equipment, health clothes. I have said before, I think it was mainly because of corruption and maladministration. Because when you say it's just admin, when proper processes were followed, and to issue IDs, an internal process, understand? So it means the government printing house was already going to print those ID cards. Mm. And if a minister in 100 days can release how much? Over 10,000, over 100,000 IDs that could have not been released in more than a year. Mm. I don't think it was just mere administration. I think it had to do with corruption and who gets what kickback.
So what are you saying? That some backlogs are in deliberate?
Yeah, deliberate.
So that someone else can get paid to fix the backlog?
To fix the mess. That's what is happening. Mm. You create a mess so that when people are desperate and when there is pressure, somebody will make money out of that pressure. One of the things that has recently happened is water. And I spoke about in April this year, I spoke about the water crisis that will happen around June, July. And engineers and civil engineers and smart people are like, you know nothing about engineering. The 1st of September, it was the Lesotho Water Highlands Project. You know that we're going to experience water shortages because for the next 6 months or so, there'll be the cleaning of the pipes, the revamping, so that they are servicing the Lesotho Highlands Water Project so that it must be able to service us for another 30 years like it has done.
Sure.
I've asked a basic question, and I'm not an engineer, to say, are we saying the causes of backlogs and challenges, whether it's electricity, whether it's water, whether it's IDs, whether it's driver's license, are we saying we did not service the equipment and other things all along? Is that what they are saying? Mm. Are we saying since Beg Buota signed the Lesotho Water Island project in 1993, nothing has happened to service that process until today? I think it has been serviced. I think it has been maintained. I think the water pipes and tanks of culture has been maintained. Mm. But things were deliberately neglected to upkeep the infrastructure because a certain Mr. X company had to benefit in upkeeping the infrastructure. Mm. In the past, I used to make an example with a basic thing of meters in Tshwane, my own metro. And I know about that because I'm affected.
Yes, sir.
People who installed the water meters in Tshwane in the early 90s, they were working for the municipality. They left with the blueprint. They opened water meters companies to render the service to the city of Tshwane. They go and they mess up the whole system because the city of Tshwane will call them as engineers, as experts, and as companies that can resolve that problem. The same thing is where I stayed in Tshwane. They introduced in my area, what do they call this, prepaid meters of electricity in 2019. Mm. Between 2019 and today, fresh, my electricity meter was changed 5 times. Between 2019 and today, every time there's a new company, there's a new meter. Why would the government do that? Why would every year or every 8 months they put a different looking meter by a different company? Because somebody is milking the state. And I'm using that as an example.
But lucky you, though. We applied for a prepaid meter about 5 years ago. We're still waiting.
Yeah, well, I don't know what's going on in Joburg. But in Tshwane, we didn't even ask. I didn't apply. They forced it on us. Mm. Then every 8 months, there's a new company that says, we've been appointed, we're bringing new meters. They are different, they are nicer, they are more effective. Boom, They cash out. Then the next company comes. You know, corruption and maladministration, it is so worse in the government if one can dig deeper.
Mm.
You just ask a simple question. There was a backlog of 100,000 IDs by Home Affairs.
Mm.
And we are not changing the IDs. The same idea. 100,000. Yeah. One minister in less than 2 months. And the minister does not deal with those things. The minister is a political head.
Absolutely.
There's a new political head. The DG is still the same. The DDGs and the chief are still the same people. But suddenly, no.
But hence there's a saying, political will. Some things are not happening because there is no political will.
And why there's no political will? When you have passed government policies, as a political party, let me use the ANC, for example. Mm. They've got good policies. They pass them. They vote for them in parliament. Then they shove them. Why? When you pass them, there's a political will. You have done your part.
Mm.
What you are supposed to do is to oversee that what you have signed off in parliament and the president has put on the dotted line, the signature. Your duty as a minister or a deputy minister or political head is to see to it that what politicians have decided is implemented.
Sure.
So I think there's a disjuncture between the political heads and the public administrators, or I call DGs and CEOs of entities and commissioners as public administrators. I think there's a disjuncture there, because why would a whole DG refuse to implement what the minister has voted for in parliament?
Mm.
And why would the minister keep quiet about it? To say, I've got this DG who's not rolling this process out. Understand? So that is disjunction, but that's where, again, your GNU in 100 days. That's where, again, I think I'm seeing things are moving, because now you find that it's no longer a deployment of comrades from one political party.
Mm.
You find the ministers from another party, the DGs from another party, or the deputy ministers from another party. In transport sector, for example, the minister is a Barbara Crissy, who's got a very clear record of government from the province of Gauteng. The deputy the deputy minister is from the IFP. In a sense. So I think that helps to oil and to manage the administration of government. It does help, because they are watching each other.
Sure.
They are now being found accountable to each other, which is, I think, it's a good thing. One of the benefits of the GNU is that, in my observation.
And I think what a lot of other political parties can and hopefully will learn from the DA is look for the low-hanging fruits if you're looking for political points.
And shine.
There are low-hanging fruits. And sometimes all it is PRing something that you're doing.
Yes.
Because the DA have PR'd things that ANC ministers had started already.
Exactly.
But they're acting like, look at what we're doing.
Look at what we're doing at this record time without spending more money.
Yeah.
And we can't blame the DA for that. We can call them opportunists. No, they are liars. They're all over the media. But they're acting. They are telling the people what they're capable of doing. You understand? Mm. I mean, it happened this week when our club was walloped, and you told me I must not be excited on Saturday morning.
Oh, Kaizer Chiefs.
Yes.
But you know what? Kaizer Chiefs has been doing well for the last 2 games at least.
but I mean, going back to the thing, look what Gaetan McKenzie did.
Yeah.
And I know personally that Gaetan McKenzie is not a diehard of Kaizer Chiefs.
Sure.
But as a sports minister, after looking at that game, he stands up and he said, no.
Because it was shocking.
It was shocking what was happening. Mm. This is pure robbery, not because of Kaizer Chiefs. He speaks as a minister. He said, no, why are we not having VAR?
Mm.
Suddenly, boom, the Danny Jordans of this world, they come out of the crowds and they're like, no, it will be expensive to have VAR. We need sponsors. Danny Jordan, it was your duty to go and find sponsor to have VAR.
Why are you a leader if you're not leading?
Nobody has ever said VAR is cheap.
Sure.
Nobody has ever said it doesn't need money and sponsors. We are saying it is needed.
Sure. Because what is the cost of not having it?
Yes. And I can give Gaetan and I nearly said transport and sport a free advice. They can get money easily for VAR.
Yeah.
The league is now sponsored by this betting company.
Yes.
Betways or whatever. Betway,
yes.
And gambling is becoming prime in South Africa, which are, in my view, dangerous. We can talk about it some other time. Now, we can say to Betway, if we want a fair game and people to bet for a fair game, sponsor the VAR.
Yeah, because betting is big money. Surely you want people to bet on something that is
legit
and has zero room for error.
Exactly.
So pay for the VAR.
Pay for the VAR.
So people can bet knowing that I'm not pissing my money away.
Exactly.
So there's always an angle.
There's always. Betting, it's a big thing in the country.
Yeah.
Gambling has become very big in the world, especially in sports.
Sure.
It has been legalized all over the world.
Ask any black child from the 70s and 80s how often dad was betting on horses.
On horses.
And no one knew there was a horse race. No one knew, but dad knew.
Yes. I used to be sent to go and collect, and I started learning at young age 16.
Our videographer Trevor used to be sent as a child, primary school, to go bet on those.
I knew all the trifectas and the pick six and all that. I learned them as a child. I'm like, there's money here. Go and collect 100 rand, my son. And I learned that you put only 2 rands, and you can go home with 50 rands
exactly,
that time. So this can be managed. And we must engage these capitalists and the people who are. By the way, it was not stupid to can take over from DSTV or Ncarson. They were not stupid. They saw money there. They see business there. Make them to pay.
Yeah.
Those who are claimed to be investors, here's an opportunity to invest on VAR in South Africa. Then our lovely, peaceful Kaizer Chiefs will stop being cheated on.
That's the least you can do for your betting addicts. They must at least be addicted to something that's clean.
Yes, that's clean. At the very least. There's so many people around me who are betting addicts, and I laugh. I don't want to even try once fresh. I'm one of the people who get easily addicted.
Sure.
So when I know that it's dangerous, I avoid doing that. I don't put money in a machine.
Let's speak, in fact, speaking of dangerous, on Tuesday night, Iran sends 200 missiles into Israel.
Yes.
And I think it was through American intelligence that the Israelis were warned that they're coming. Get the dome ready.
Yeah, yeah. The steel or metal dome.
The steel dome, whatever it's called. And Bibi Netanyahu says Iran made a big mistake tonight and they'll pay for it.
Fresh. Netanyahu and Iran, they've done it 2 months back.
Yes.
When they sent about, they doubled now. The last time they sent 99, actually I read from the Iranian news agency.
And also you're sending, because I believe the element of surprise is often what puts you in an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost feels like Iran deliberately sent missiles that could be intercepted in the bigger scheme of things.
I wrote on my social media pages last night to say, you know what, these people are exciting us. They'll give us heart attack for they're playing games. They spend billions. They are upping the arms industry.
Sure.
And America had to go and send their fighter jets to go and help Israel very quickly to intercept some of them. By the way, I do not believe that is the American intelligence that says that. I've spoken to some of the military experts, and they say they knew, they were informed. That's how it works in conventional wars. Understand? Iran had to inform them to say, we will be attacking.
Sure.
So they did inform the U.S. and they did inform Russia. They did inform Israel that we will be sending missiles your way. So I think it is also to test the capabilities of Israel intercepting those. Remember the first 99 in April, it was drones.
But an airport was hit though.
Yeah,
with American fighter jets.
They will be one or two, you know, targets and some military, you know, that gets hit. But when you look at it, there's not even, well, when I checked, you know, the last time, there was not even one casualty.
There's actually one casualty, and ironically, I think it was a Palestinian.
Exactly. You understand? There's no casualties. One, two, they don't even hit military targets. You know, the actual military, the way Israel is bombing hospitals, schools, homes. They are bombing headquarters of the military everywhere. They are bombing headquarters of what they call terrorists.
And knowing them, they want to go for oil refineries to punish Iran.
To punish Iran. They will do that. Why is Iran playing nice? Yes, we must congratulate Iran for warning Israel and congratulate them for not killing innocent civilians and people. I think they don't want to kill people. I think there's an element of humanitarianism. But I've seen now, what do you call it, Israel said they're sending ground forces into Lebanon for a combat. Yeah, let the soldiers kill soldiers. And stop being cowards of releasing missiles from jet fighters that cannot be intercepted, and they land in humanitarian places.
And you know, America carries on about how they will stand with Israel because they have a right to defend themselves.
Yeah.
My question is this. Let's forget about Hamas for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Do Palestinians not have a right to defend themselves against unfair occupation, illegal occupation? But who worries about
the self-defense of the Palestinians?
Of the Palestinians. Let's forget Hezbollah for a second. Mm-hmm. Let's forget about Hamas for a second. When do the rights of Palestinians kick in to a country like America?
But the Americans,
where even the UN have said that all of what has been happening for the last 60 years is illegal.
Fresh. It's as recent as in April when Israel was celebrating the occupation of Palestine.
Sure.
You know, for all since 1948.
Mm.
You understand? Now, the UN has been making that noise. The UN was making noise, and the US and the UK, when we in South Africa lived under the same situation, because we are not being bombed by aircrafts, but we're being killed by the apartheid and told by the apartheid system. We are still landless today because of the apartheid system and colonialism. What did the UK and the US do? They did absolutely nothing. Actually, when other countries like the Scandinavian countries, Sweden and all other countries withdrew their investments in South Africa under economic embargo and sanctions, Ford continued to operate in South Africa. Coca-Cola continued to operate. The UK companies like the British Petroleum, they continue to operate in South Africa. So I don't expect the US or the UK as the worst colonizer and the biggest colonizer of this world. I don't expect them to think for Palestinians as human beings. America has been arming the Israel Defense Force. The US has been arming them. Almost every army used by the Israel Defense Force comes from the United States of America. They even have a budget in the U.S. of the billions of dollars that they are funding. You know, they were the first to react to send F-16 jet flights, you know, during the course of this week to help Israel. So this thing of the USA going to play the master and the peacemaker at the platform of the toothless United Nations to talk about you have the right to defend yourself. They have the right to defend themselves because Israel is an extension of the U.S. The U.S. is known, and they need Israel in the Middle East for their own political as well as military interests.
And also, let's say that you have a right to defend yourself, and you feel like Hezbollah has been doing what Hezbollah has been doing, which is apparent for everyone.
Yeah.
Where does your right start and the right of everyone else not to be a victim of your right to defend yourself start?
Exactly.
Because if I'm taking out General Butsang, who is a Hezbollah leader, but I'm going to also kill 200 children.
Other people, yes.
If I'm going to kill 200 other people, are we saying that you have unfettered rights to defend yourself, even if it's to the detriment of other lives?
And that's what the USA and Israel are saying, unfortunately. That's what they are saying. And the UN is overseeing that whole process. There are countries that I'm questioning, Turkey, Iran, Russia, the so-called friends of Palestine, who I'm saying, we are talking and going to, you know, South Africa led by Mena Lady Pando, they go to the International Court of Justice, they go to the UN and say this war must stop, we must stop, we must stop. It's not a war because Palestine is not in a position to can fight back. So you cannot call it a war. It's an absolute genocide orchestrated by Israel and funded and armed by the USA. That's what we should call it. It's not a war. There's no war in the Middle East.
Yeah.
It's America using Israel to wipe off the state of Palestine. As if, Fresh, the state of Palestine was involved in any manner against the Jews. Or in the history of this world, we don't have the Palestinians. Before Israel arrived, the Jews arrived in Israel. Before Israel became a state, we do not have in any history of this world the Palestinians fighting any other nation. We don't have it. It's not on record. Now, those people in Palestine, I think they have no human rights because of the goodness in them. The fact that they accommodated the Jews and allowed them to keep on growing and growing and expanding, and they woke up very late to say, but these guests are misbehaving and they have overstayed their welcome. They are now pushing us out. It was just too late.
Now,
and
now, the superpowers now you've taken my house. you've relegated me to the shed, and I must have permission to leave my shed.
Yeah. You understand?
Please make it make sense.
It doesn't make sense. So the so-called war in the Middle East, and we know that when this whole thing started, Israel actually, Saudi Arabia was involved. What did the Americans do? They bought the whole of Saudi Arabia. They control Saudi Arabia by remote control. I don't care who says what. Saudi Arabia is a toothless dog of the U.S. They control them. Then there was Lebanon, there was Syria around, then Iran and Iraq and all that. So Israel actually has had fights with all the surrounding countries. At a moment, Israel is involved in a war with four countries. It's Palestine itself, it's Lebanon, it's Syria and Yemen. Israel is fighting and bombing all those four countries, and somebody wants to come and tell us and our children that there's a war in the Middle East. There's no war in the Middle East. America is bombing and destroying the Middle East for oil and for their own military interests, and they're using Israel. And that's why they created the State of Israel. America was created, but we must also know in history that America is actually owned by the Jews. You know, some of the Jews that moved from the Holocaust in Germany and all, they moved to America, established themselves. They are doing very well, you know, financially. They are funding both the Democratic Party in the U.S. and the Democrats, as well as the Republicans. They are being funded by Jews. So it is for the best interest of a few minority that we were made as the world to believe that Hitler was the most evil person against the Jews. And these Jews are protected more than any other nation on earth. They are even protected more than the so-called Red Indians, that the Americans have taken the land of the Native Americans. They are protected more than the Africans. In South Africa, the Jews are funding the Democratic Alliance. Again, the same story. So it is not about human rights. It is not about independence of the state of Palestine or independent states and defending their sovereign right. It is about which human beings are less important than the others. That's what is happening in the world.
And 1,000 years of human history will show you that the browner or darker your skin,
exactly,
the likelihood of you having rights over other people is very, very small.
You are still nice. You are saying it's very small. We have no rights over other people. It does not exist. We are sitting here 30 years in our own country for 30 years. We still own less than 20% of the land. For me, that question.
Feeling like a guest in your own
land. I'm still feeling like a guest in my own land. And the colonial settlers and benefactors of apartheid, they are even more comfortable in our own land. So, We don't have any rights over anybody. That's why they even write laws for us. We just accept them. But the problem is no longer the colonizers. The problem is no longer the racists. The problem is no longer the former apartheid people and the imperial. The problem is us accepting what they are imposing on us. Cowards will say, but Botswana, what can we do? We don't have missiles. Can't think, what are we friends for with the Russians and the Chinese? What kind of friends are we keeping?
And I'm sure Iran will gladly give us oil.
Talking of oil, something very interesting happened. I clapped hands. Did you see Petrobras is buying or investing on a stake to extract the oil that we have just discovered in the Western Cape? And I clapped hands to say, thanks God, it's a BRICS member state. Petrobras is Petrobrazil. They've got good experience in that. We're keeping it at home. And I hope BP and Shell are not going to be brought anywhere close to this project.
Hopefully it will totally be just us.
Hey, totally. You can, yeah, those are the French, those ones. Hey, you know, French imperialists. But we need leaders who are principled, who have guts, who can put their head on the back. They may be killed. It's okay to be killed. People are killed every day. It's okay when politicians get killed. But they must put their heads on the table to say, but not in the name of my country.
Yes, sir.
Masisi is doing it. Botswana can't fire. Botswana can't even fire. I don't even think they got rockets. They can't fire one rocket. But Masisi is putting his head on the table to say, these are our diamonds. And these diamonds will work for my people. That young boy in Burkina Faso, he has put his life. He's even leaving the UN now. Captain President Traore, to say France and the world and the UN and the AU, you can go to hell. Burkina Faso is independent. We'll do things the way we want to do it. The world has allowed Sweden, or not Sweden, Switzerland, to do it. Switzerland is not a member of the United Nations. Understand? They are the richest country in the world. With what riches? From where?
What mineral wealth?
What, you understand? So we need leaders who can realize that the world is turning.
Sure.
Principled and say, these minerals are ours. You will extract them. You will use them in our terms. Mm. Once we don't have that leader in this country, let's forget, me and you, we're going to die before we see freedom in our lifetime. What we have now is not freedom. It's an arrangement, yes, negotiated political settlement. Freedom is when things have turned. Mm. The 1913 Land Act is reversed. Mm. African people own the land. You know, I'm rereading a book now by Che Guevara. It's called, actually, Che Talks to the Youth.
Ah, yes.
And one of the quotations from there, it says, the government that distributes useless land to its natives and citizens must be removed from power.
Sure.
You must distribute productive land, economic land. Mm. Don't give people land to go and build shacks. Mm. Give people land where they can mine gold, platinum, and feed themselves, or where they can do farming. And that land in South Africa, it's in the land of the minority who are white. Mm. It's in the land of the imperialists who are white, not South Africans. Mm. And that's my challenge. If we don't resolve the land
question. Or it's a golf course.
It's still a productive land, the golf course.
But that's what I'm saying, that or it's a golf course that very few people have access to.
Yes, and there's money happening in the golf course, whether it's illegal money or the money you pay for green fees, there is money.
Yeah.
And so for me, if we don't own that land, me having a piece of land and I build my house or my shack, that's not land ownership. Productive land. I want to own a river so that I can fish and feed my children and sell fish to the people of Santin who can't fish or who are lazy to fish.
And irrigate your own land.
And irrigate your own land. You understand? That's the kind of land ownership I'm talking about. Don't tell me I must go and buy shares like Mr. Mutsepe and say I own a mine when I'm a shareholder in a mine. You don't own the mine. You are a shareholder in the mine. The owner of the mine is sitting in London or in Switzerland or in the US. Those are the owners of the land. We don't own the land, and that's the challenge, bruh.
And on that Pan-African note...
Oh, is that the Pan-African note? I thought it's reality.
We shall call it a day. Butsang, how do we get a hold of you, sir?
Thank you, brother man. It's 082-485-9100 on WhatsApp.
Strictly for business or for land?
I must tell you what happened with that number when I got a call. But anyway, and then it's butsangm@gmail.com and yes, at butsangm on social media. I got a call from one of our followers. She's a South African living in... working for a French company living in Amsterdam.
Okay.
She wants to be an author and she needed a full-length consultation. We're on the phone for 59 minutes and I said to her, you know, I'm sending you the invoice.
Yeah.
She said, I'll gladly pay for this because she wants to publish books.
Ah.
And she said, I hope I phoned the right number. I said, no, this is the right number. You WhatsApp the right number. It's not for a personal calls. But thank you, brother man. All is well.
Yes, sir.
And I think we had a great show.
It was a fun show. Yeah. It was a fun show. Thank you very much. We are done for this week's Wow What a Week hashtag Politricks with Botsang Modimo Amemuyilwa. We'll do this again next week. Coming to you from AM Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Trevor and the team at Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography. Shout out to artist The Floor Fraser for all of the imaging and our executive producer, Keletso Modisa King. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.